You're listening to Swim Out, a podcast about the fabulous world of outdoor swimming.
Hello, Hunter.
Hi, Vicky.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of the Swim Out podcast, where we'll be talking all about adventure.
As we head into October, what better way to round off the open water season than with a few epic stories of open water exhilaration? Coming up on today's show, we're speaking to a man who swam across the world's three largest whirlpools.
Sweden's greatest ever open water swimmer, who swam the Ocean Seven.
The first time in Ireland, I was in for 15 minutes, and then this is so cold, and I was shaking like an hour afterwards.
And more words of wisdom from our lovely in-house coach, Dan.
Be very careful when it comes to the sea. It is a cruel mistress if you do not treat it with the respect it needs.
And we hear from open water swimming's Crocodile Dundee.
No one ever should have to swim with a knife, but because of what I was doing, it was a very safe thing to have on us.
So, yeah, Vicky, what have you kind of been up to the last month or two? Tell us about your own kind of adventurous swims.
Yeah, I've been doing loads of really lovely swims in Wales, actually. Lots of lakes and lots of glorious sea and surf swimming. It was really nice. I was swimming at Redriks Lake and I saw this man, and he was dragging this massive pack behind him. So I said, "What you up to, mate?" And he said that he was planning to swim with this pack behind him and then stop and camp. And I thought that sounded very adventurous.
Yeah, no, that sounds really cool. I think I've heard of these things. I think they're called a ruck raft. I was actually maybe thinking about getting one for my swim next summer, where I've got a very, very adventurous swim planned over the Inner Sound, which is the UK's deepest water. It sounds pretty cool, this ruck raft business. I think it's kind of a bit like an open water pannier.
Or a very big sea snail, even.
A few weeks ago, I cycled down to London's Brockwell Park, dodging some of the first autumnal showers to meet Callum Hudson, one of the Wild Swimming Brothers, who have swum some of the most treacherous and yet misunderstood channels of water on Earth. It's not just about the adrenaline, though. As a trio of brothers, they're committed advocates for reconnecting with the natural world. Through a mixture of art, events, writing, and beautifully curated social media, their self-proclaimed mission is to inspire people of all ages to take part in wild swimming. Callum began by telling me how he became introduced to the Corrie Vrekken in the Highlands of Scotland.
I think I'd seen some pictures of people doing it, or a post in like the Outdoor Swimming Society or one of the social media groups of someone doing the Corrie Vrekken. And I immediately, it was in Scotland, it was a maelstrom, and I didn't know what a maelstrom was.
Yeah, what the actual hell is a maelstrom?
So the definition, and there's only a handful in the world. So basically, it's where you have a very shallow sea ledge. So it's typically, like if you imagine the spine of a mountain, and it's when you get a serration in the spine, so a cut in that spine. So there's a really, really shallow body of water with really deep ledges either side. And when the tides change, you get colossal amounts of water rushing over this really narrow ledge. So it's quite a unique topographical setup. When we looked at the Corrie Vrekken, so we looked at it, we were like, that's going to be really fun. It's 1.3 miles across, so it's quite a good kind of amateur sea swim to try. And then I remember hearing, because obviously everyone likes to make it sound as extreme as possible, so it's the third biggest in the world, the third biggest maelstrom. And I was like, whoa, there's more? Where are the other ones? And then after we'd done that, then I started looking at the other ones. Yeah. And it just was really unexplored. The Corrie Vrekken had only been swam, you know, I think it's a couple of hundred times maybe. Mm-hmm. It was weirdly, so it was swum by George Orwell's one-legged nephew in 1984. So George Orwell wrote 1984 on Jura. He was shipwrecked by the maelstrom and his boat was like cast against the rocks with him and his nephew. And then his nephew, on the anniversary of George Orwell's death, was the first person to swim across.
So had you built up had there been a previous swim before the Corrie Vrekken that you three had done? Had you always worked in this format?
No. So we'd grown up swimming outdoors, but I don't think I'd ever worn a swim cap until I was maybe, you know, 24 or something. So we'd always swam. We'd had swimming lessons. We were good amateur swimmers. And then we all drifted off to adult life, university, jobs, and I wasn't swimming at all, so I probably hadn't really properly swam in maybe 5 or 6 years. Yeah. Moved down to London, was working here on the tube, 9 to 6, in a suit, and was just really disillusioned with it. I got into doing triathlons. I had an uncle who did an Ironman, and I was like, that's cool, I'll do an Ironman, that'll be a big challenge, and trained for that, and wanted to push it. Did a double Ironman, and then at that level, I was like, okay, this is really like destroying my social life. There's too much training to be 23, 24 living in London, and it wasn't quite worth it. So I kind of had enjoyed swimming the most and decided that I wanted to try and do a swimming expedition. So then it became the three of us. And no, the Corry Reckon really was dropping everyone in at the deep end. We hadn't ever done a swim, the three of us. We'd never done a sea swim together. And I remember the ship captain, he took us out and he was like, oh, it's a big swell today. And we went out and he's like, it's actually a really big swell. I think he said it was one of the biggest swells they had in a while. And he was like, you guys are really experienced sea swimmers, aren't you? And I was like, yeah, get us in. And Robbie, when he went in, I think he swallowed like loads of salt water. But we made it, you know, made it across. And that was kind of beginning of the end, really.
Yeah.
Can you just tell me what it feels like to swim over this kind of patch of water?
On the Saltstraumen in Norway, which is the strongest in the world, one of the main things I can remember is I genuinely felt like I was being lifted up by like a giant's hand and pushed through the water. So it felt like this amazing force was kind of pushing you through the water. On the Corry Vrekken, it was really choppy, high waves. There wasn't as strong a current under the water. But maelstrom swimming is basically trying to swim when it's not a maelstrom. So you have a window to get across the Corry Vrekken, for example, 1.2 miles. The ship captain tells you when you're going. You've got, you know, 45 minutes to get to the other side. So he'll calculate a window to get across. But for the ones that hadn't been done, you have to work with the ship captain to work out the right time to do the crossing to the exact minute or, you know, nearest increment. So I think for the Saltstraumen was 12 minutes to get across. We had to leave at 6:28 p.m. So it's quite precise.
Does your family kind of share an affinity with the sea?
A lot of our exposure to the outdoors, seas, rivers, lakes, came through our grandma. So we had a grandma who's genuinely her real name, and so many people think we're making this up. She was called Grandma Wild, and she lived right up in the Highlands of Scotland, in the middle of nowhere, on her own, didn't have a car, didn't have a TV. And from a very young age, we would go and visit her for these summer holidays, and we would spend it outdoors, on the beach. As anyone who's ever swam in Scotland will know, it's freezing cold. So that was a really early exposure to, there's nothing to worry about. You're 6 years old, you're going in the sea. And I think that was probably a little seed that was planted very early on. So we kind of owe a little bit to Grandma Wild. And then probably also our mum. It was her choice for us to be in the Lake District. It was her choice to have a house with a river at the bottom of the garden. We have quite a matriarchal family where it's our grandma and our mum who've really inspired us to be outdoors and to have a relationship with water.
There's a huge amount of focus on wild swimming right now. Are we in the midst of a revolution, a health fad, or maybe just something else?
Oh, you're gonna set the social media people on fire with this one. I think it's a bit of everything, really. It's a little bit of a zeitgeist. It's a little bit of a fad in terms of its popularity. But the way that I look at it is, if you're really angry about a definition of an outdoor exercise, your priorities are not right. At the worst, it's just getting people who weren't outdoors. And yes, if it's a bit faddy and maybe, I don't know, it's done because you want to share a picture on social media, at least that person is in a waterfall swimming outside. I think it's quite restricted to the UK. In the whole of Southeast Asia, everyone swims outside the whole time. There's no concept that, you know, it's not wild, it's a beautiful, tranquil beach. I think in the US and Canada and New Zealand, maybe other big swimming communities, everyone just swims outside all the time. Like, they don't have that. They're not disconnected from nature. Whereas I think the reason it's caught on in the UK and maybe especially England and more urban areas, wild swimming will be most popular in somewhere like London or other cities in a strange way. But I think it's because we're incredibly overpopulated, you know, people are quite detached from nature. Even the concept that you have to set, we've had people, how do you go for a wild swim? What do you mean? Well, you just go for a swim outside. It's not, it's, you don't need a manual. We've had people, you know, oh, you should, you know, write a blog of how to get into wild swimming, which seems so self-explanatory and obvious.
Which part do you enjoy most? The anticipation, the sensation of living the moment out in actuality, or is it the reflective part which comes at the end and the retelling of the yarn?
It's definitely not the moment after. I always feel really disappointed in a way afterwards that it's over. So there's the moment of relief, and then there's a moment of sadness of, oh, that was, I was just, that was amazing. That whole, the build up, the training, the planning, you know, the feeling of doing something incredible. And so I think there's always a little lull afterwards. Most people probably have this after a race or any form of endurance, that you do get a little bit of a crash. I think, to be honest, sharing it. I've done swims on my own before, and it's just nowhere near as enjoyable. And when you go through it with other people, when you go through it with your brothers, it's just a feeling that that was really worthwhile. We were really living as much as we possibly could, and that was a fantastic use of time.
That was Callum Hudson of the Wild Swimming Brothers. You can watch their swashbuckling adventures from around the globe on YouTube and Instagram. There are a whole host of female marathon swimmers of note. Indeed, women would appear to have the edge in most ultra-marathon swimming endeavours. Anna Karin Nordin is high on the leaderboard of this posse of women and is an honoree of the International Marathon Swimming Hall of Fame. She's nailed the Ocean 7, not one for the faint-hearted. This year, despite COVID-19, she's managed to complete a massive swim around Öland, Sweden's second largest island in the Baltic Sea. I caught up with Anna online shortly after she completed her recent adventure and started by asking her about the swim and how it felt for her.
You know, I had roughly 15 degrees around Öland, 333 kilometres, and it wasn't any problem. It was, they're always cold to get in. It doesn't matter where you are, if you go into in a pool. It's cold to get in, but as soon as you start swimming, it's okay.
So you planned it before COVID. Did you have to adapt it?
As soon as the COVID started and I stopped training in the pool, I went out, and up here in north of Sweden, it's quite cold. So I just told my mind that it can't be colder than it is here. So I did some training in the open sea up here before I went to Öland.
And what was the highlight of the swim for you?
The highlights is that when I got to the Segerstaden, it's another lighthouse. When I got to his lighthouse, he was waving with a flag and waving to me from the top of the lighthouse. And that was so, so nice.
At the end of the swim, you were wearing a crown, I saw. Can you tell us anything about that crown? Because it was quite an extraordinary looking crown.
Yeah, this couple we met up in Long Erik in their lighthouse in the north. They were following us around from the north the whole way on the east coast around to the finish. And she was taking my dog for a walk, and she was picking some flowers and did a crown while I was swimming the final length. So when I got there, she gave it and put it on my head and said, that's why you were stealing the flowers. And she was just laughing.
What a very nice end. So going back to your previous swimming adventures, the English Channel was your first marathon swim. Can you tell us a little bit about your English Channel swim?
My first swim, I had a flat, calm sea. Sun was up. It was just beautiful. And I had my father on the boat. And the only time he disappeared, it was when Eddie Spelling was doing some English breakfast down below. Then my father disappeared because I could smell the sausage and the bacon and the eggs.
It's a major achievement to swim the Ocean 7. Can you tell us a bit about what the Ocean 7 is?
That's a 7 big swim in 7 different parts of the world. And it's both cold water, warm water, so that you have to adapt what where you're going. When you go into Ireland, for example, it's very, very cold. when you're in Hawaii, you have warm water and you have a very warm weather as well. So it's different everywhere.
And which was your favorite one of those?
English Channel is the first and special, but then the North Channel. That's my final, and it meant so much. And I've been to Ireland so many times, and I just love that. And I had this fantastic swim as well. I had like the English, it was flat calm, the sun was up. The only thing you could see while I was doing the swim, it was a seal male in the middle. And then I could see all the crew on the boat kind of disappear on the back on the boat about what happened. And then I turned around and I saw the seal. And they, Anna, you just swim. Go, keep on going. And I just, okay, that's good. So North Channel was my favorite.
And your least favorite?
The Sago Channel in Japan. Because we have expected me to swim in 7 hours, 8 hours, absolutely maximum nine hours, not a minute longer. But I had to swim for 19 hours and 11 minutes. So that was the toughest one because I crossed the shipping line quite fast, but then I kind of followed the current along the coast. So I just kept on swimming and that was a tough one.
Just going back to the North Channel, so that just for the listeners, the North Channel is really, really cold. It's got loads of jellyfish. It's 21.4 kilometres from Scotland to Ireland. Looked really exciting because you got across just a week before Michelle Macy, who was also doing the Ocean 7 Challenge. But by beating her, you became the second person and the first woman to complete the challenge. So were you and Michelle kind of corresponding with each other or?
No, we didn't. We were three women at the same level at this moment. After the swim, you know, I become the first. And the day after I was going with Brian on a little boat trip. He was doing Mark Hill tours. And then I met Michelle. She was coming down the pier. She's a tall woman, redheaded. And she said, have you done it? Yes, I have. And she wasn't that keen on it, but she congratulated me and I was so happy.
I just want to talk to you about women swimmers in particular, actually. There is evidence that women do better than men at very, very long events. We've also had Sarah Thomas on this programme when with her four-way channel crossing. Only 7 out of the 21 people who've done the Ocean 7 are women. But how come only 7?
Most of the swims are in quite good temperature in the water. Where they got stuck is the North Channel because it's cold. The first time in Ireland, I was in for 15 minutes and then this is so cold. And I was shaking like an hour afterwards. The next day I went in for half an hour and then I kind of agreed it. So that's how you have to prepare yourself and be ready.
But do you think that women are better at that than men?
I think we are more tougher mentally because they are faster than us normally. Yeah, I think we have that more in the head.
Sarah Thomas doesn't get any funding of any sort. You, I don't think, get any funding of any sort. How do you manage to pay for all of that travel?
Work hard. Work a lot.
What's next for you, Anna, swimming-wise?
I have a monster lake here in Sweden called Storsjön. It's 70 kilometres long, so it might be a 24-hour swim. But it's a very deep one. It's like Loch Ness, but longer. I would like to do that one. But then as my dream goal was to swim between all the islands in Hawaii, because if you haven't been to Hawaii, it's a beautiful, beautiful place. And it's warm and it's nice water and everything is so nice there. So that's my goal or my dream.
Wow. I mean, yeah, just what an incredible swimmer, really.
Yeah, she is. She's a really, truly amazing swimmer. She gets hardly any recognition. There's hardly anything written about her, which is crazy. And, you know, just generally women are succeeding in the ultra marathon world. And yet you don't see them getting massive sponsorship deals or loads of stuff about them, really. And it's just, it's quite extraordinary in my view.
Yeah, I think we're due a reckoning.
You're listening to the Swim Out podcast with Vicky and Hunter.
While swimming in the sea at Saltdean recently in some large waves, I managed to give myself a scare when I lost sight of a very large buoy. So I thought we'd check in with our in-house coach Dan on a couple of pointers for keeping safe and improving your crawl in choppy conditions.
Vicky, hi, this is Dan speaking. Thank you ever so much for the invite to speak again in Coach's Corner on the Swim Out podcast. Always a pleasure. So I heard you were swimming in the sea recently. What makes swimming in the sea so challenging? Obviously, there's tides, there's currents, there's a lot of barriers. And personally, I'm not a fan of swimming in the sea. Give me a nice flat lake, river, any day of the week. My last Ironman was actually South Africa, and quite a choppy sea swim. And if you are a sort of a natural pool swimmer from a background of competitive pool swimming, I find it very challenging and not one of my sort of favored swim mediums. When I trained and swam with some friends in Devon who'd grown up sea swimming, you know, in the pool I could match them all day long, but to go in the sea, they'd know how to roll and work with the swell and the currents, and I just couldn't keep up, as I had that mentality of just battering my way through and not working with. So there is a huge amount of challenges, and not just physical, but also it's the psychology I find tricky as well. You know, once you're out there, you can feel so insignificant. So concentration, focus, confidence, practicing in open water in the sea is vital to help you sort of keep those demons at bay. Getting familiar in that unfamiliar environment so that you are a little bit more relaxed. Take some responsibility. Be very careful when it comes to the sea. It is, you know, a cruel mistress if you do not treat it with the respect it needs. Physical sighting. Now, in calmer, stiller water, I often recommend use something that's in the background, in the distance, a landmark that's in line with the direction that you want to be moving in. Rather than sort of lifting the body high and trying to look down on the horizon to where that, you know, and even 400 or 500 meters away, a 6 foot tall buoy can look pretty insignificant, you know. But if there is a tall tree, something that's not going to move, that will help you, that can help keep the head a little bit lower, the body a bit flatter, so that your natural flow is maintained. Sometimes it will just be choppy and you will have to do what you can. And if that means reverting to some breaststroke to get the head a little bit higher, to look down, as you reach the peak of a wave and the buoy you're chasing is just not there, you've got to just slow it down and take a good look, see where it is. So I remember racing the Bournemouth event, and it was choppy, and you'd just go to take an arm stroke and you'd meet the trough between a couple of waves, and that arm would just slip through. Very, very tough swimming in the sea, and hats off to all those that try the channel. You mentioned swim sets. I would work on, you know, the ability to re-accelerate into your rhythm and stroke quite strongly. And so fartlek training, if you're familiar with the running concept, applies and works nicely in the water swimming. So just change your pace. So you can get 100, 200 meters done, and then you have to take a pause, you know, lift the head a significant amount to see where you're going, but then get the stroke back under control, get the rhythm so that you are back on track and making progress. Enjoy your swimming.
We've been catching up with you, our lovely listeners, again this month, asking about some of your most adventurous swims to date. We begin with Rick, who lives in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who also sent us our first ever piece of fan mail.
One of my most adventurous swims was in August 2016 when I swam 3K across the Strait of Messina from Messina, Sicily to Calabria, Italy. I learned at that time that the expression between a rock and a hard place was based upon the rocks and the currents and the whirlpools which can be found in the Strait of Messina. At the pre-crossing meeting the night before, it was really like a meeting of the United Nations. I found out that I was the only American in the group of 30 swimmers, that the seawater would be unusually cold the next morning, and that the currents would definitely be against us and unusually fast by a factor of 4 to 5 times normal, all of which was attributable to an earthquake that had occurred in central Italy a day or two before. The crossing itself was just gorgeous. It was just beautiful crystal blue water, so clear that you could see for meters and meters ahead of you. I could see my hands, which was unusual for an open water or wild swim. Our club liaison was actually caught in a whirlpool and had to be helped out by his boat, but he was okay. And it was extra special and meaningful to me because my paternal great-grandfather emigrated from Sicily to America, and the maiden name of my paternal grandmother was Messina. Her family emigrated to the U.S. from Calabria, Italy. So I got to, you know, do something kind of special for my family. I got to return to my roots and connect my ancestral family dots just with one swim. And it was really the chance of a lifetime and the swim of a lifetime.
It's Susan Mackay.
So here I am. It's Lake Geneva here in Switzerland, just before dawn. And it's just starting to get light. And it's a beautiful orange glow.
My most adventurous swim, I think it's when I didn't want to miss the sunrise and I had an early conference call, which meant I had to come out here well before light. And that feeling of in the gloom and the dark of trying to step into that huge expanse of lake and being a bit scared of it, what my mind imagined out in that water, and just like my foot getting trapped by a little bit of weed and giving me a fright. I got over it, I managed it, and as the dawn was rising, it obviously got a lot easier. Probably my most adventurous swim so far, mind over matter, my COVID gift, wonderful.
Hello, this is Julia.
And this is Grace.
We've just done the Silly 360.
This is the swim where you swim around the largest island of the Scilly Isles, which is called St. Mary's. It's about 15 kilometres in total. But that's obviously not what it's about. It's about the adventure.
It's a swim that's split into four sections, so you get to stop off at beaches on the way, and it was absolutely beautiful, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like a tropical island.
What I thought was great about it was there were so many different kinds of sort of sea terrain that we went through. So the first section was some beautiful sort of sandy beaches and quite shallow areas where you're swimming over rocks that were actually quite close to your face at some points, weren't they? You had to be careful about the waves.
I definitely hit a rock with my hand.
And also in the first section there was complete like forests of kelp.
Oh, the weed.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing you would normally try and avoid, but there was literally no avoiding it.
And it was kind of cool because all the fish were in the reeds, so when you swam through, all the fish were like swimming around. It was great.
There was parts as well where it was really quite wavy and we were sort of going against the current, swimming between the coastline and some rocks, where you were really getting like smacked about a bit by the waves. But overall, it was a really good swim.
It was really fun. Okay, bye.
My name's Keith Rothwell and I live near Llanberis in North Wales. When I was 70 this year, we decided that we needed to do something to celebrate it. I did it with a friend of mine, a lifelong friend of mine, and we did the Channel Relay, we did Alcatraz. We found a swim that was inaugurated in 1949, which is my birth year, so we thought that was fantastic. But it was in Canada. And then the idea came along to swim in 70 different lakes. So we went over to Canada, did about 25 lakes there, some of which were really, really cold because they were glacier ice melt. A couple of them were in the wilderness, and so we were scared of bears. There were all sorts of dangers. We did about 25 in North Wales, some of them requiring long treks to be able to get to them up in the mountains. And then to finish off, we went over to Berlin and we did about another 20-odd lakes there, which were substantially warmer than the ones in Canada. So our achievement for being 70 was to swim in 70 different lakes, and we did it.
My name's Rowan Longhurst. I am an open water swimmer and also swim in London with Out to Swim. My most adventurous swim would have to be along a little stretch of Montenegrin coastline that my girlfriend and I decided to explore when we were on holiday. We were dropped off in a Blue Lagoon and given an indication of which way to swim on the way out. Certainly getting dropped in the water and then sort of told to swim back was something I'd never done before.
That was Rowan from our very own swimming club Out to Swim, ending that cornucopia of adventure stories. We also heard from Rick, Susan, Julia, Grace and Keith.
Yes, our fantastic LGBT plus swimming club that's just getting back to the pool now. If you've got any photos or videos or stories about your open water swimming exploits, we'd love to hear from you on social media.
Our final guest and friend is Fenwick Ridley. Not only was he the swimming coach at the local pool in Hexham where I grew up, but he's also one of the leading ice and adventure swimmers active in the UK today. These days, Fenwick has traded the chlorine for the outdoors, where he runs H2O Trails, a Northumbrian-based company offering coaching, lessons and adventures in the beautiful northeast of England. We caught up one sunny evening while sitting on a verge by the sublime Sweetup Reservoir. As the sun was setting over some distant wind turbines, Fenwick began by telling me about how he first came to swimming.
Just hooked straight away on swimming when I was younger. And I used it as an escape route, really. My mum wasn't too well, and of course I used it as a perfect opportunity to get out of the house, get away, and I just got very addicted as a young kid. And I think I did my first mile when I was about 6, 7. Then I ended up in my early 20s when I did my first 10K. I did it in 2 hours 30. I think it was like bang on 2 hours 30. And my old coach turned around and said, "Oh, you need to take that to open water." And sure enough, I followed a triathlon group and we went off and they just left me. Couldn't get my breathing and my God, I had the worst time. But it didn't really spoil the experience, to be honest. I just took my time and got my breathing right. I really did get a massive attachment to swimming outdoors, and I kind of ventured off and started wanting to do something a bit different. And of course, my adventure swimming, going from one place to another, trying to trek up somewhere, like going up a river, was something that I really wanted to do. And I think you'd kind of start thinking differently as well. Like when you grow into a sport, it does change a lot.
So just so far, you know, what have been your toughest swims?
The swim began on the Newcastle border. At that point there, that's where I got in and started, which is 70 plus mile of like swimming, walking and falling upstream against the current, pulling a raft behind us with all my gear. Yeah. I swam from Newcastle borderline and then travelled up all the way up across the North and South Tyne meetings and then took the right hand fork up towards Kielder. That was quite something because the level of actually switching off and swimming against the current on parts where the reservoir was actually releasing and emptying. So the speed of the water was increased, but it wasn't in flood, which was a good part. Switching off while swimming against the current, it was such a slow pace going past a bush where I must have breathed about 10, 12 times and still seen the same bush. I mean, the burning of my shoulders using big hand paddles and pulling the raft behind us and going past this bush really, really slow. Being able to like communicate with the switch off and the acceptance of pain and the acceptance that I'm here for a while is quite a hard thing to kind of switch into. Every time I got to a certain bit where I could put my feet down and then carry on going, I never grumbled, never disheartened about my performance or anything like that. I was just really buzzing and happy about my progress, but also very driven to see what was around the corner. Some days I would do about 8 hours and others 13 or 14 hours of straight sort of going at it. It took us 7 days.
Did you at any stage become unwell?
No, I know. I hurt myself a few times. Came out with quite a few bruises, didn't break anything. There was one point I got thrown down and I nearly had to cut my raft off us because there was a fallen tree that I'd passed and I ended up getting swept down a little bit and the raft went round the edge of the tree that was in the water and I went round the other way and I had to quickly pull my knife out, go to cut it, but as I did that I yanked on the raft and it swung round. Yeah. And it filled my whole dry bag up with water.
So you just kept a knife with you?
I had a knife attached to us on my chest, which was very easy to get to. No one ever should have to swim with a knife. No one's Crocodile Dundee, you know. But because of what I was doing, it was a very safe thing to have on us.
So Organic System is your online DJ producer alias, and your lockdown single, Atmosphere Recording from Planet Zine, is absolutely class, mate. I guess it just strikes me that, you know, like listening to a lot of the back catalogue, I feel like you're channeling a lot of watery sort of soundscapes. If anyone hasn't heard Organic System, what kind of genre would you maybe sort of describe it as?
I went through a journey creating sounds to create a world, and then I got obsessed with creating a basic sort of planetarium sort of soundscape and platform where the listener can literally listen and analyse what I've got in my head through just listening to the sounds. I've had about four different aliases. Of course, there's Fennec Ridley and then there's Organic System that I've left on Spotify. I will get a bit more time to get back into it, and I want to get back onto playing my didgeridoo as well, because I played a didge. But to be honest, it's time. But yeah, there's definitely an obsession with the water element into my productions, creating like a very slurpy and watery bass.
How does the version of Fennec Ridley, which is partly kind of old school raver, how does that sit with your kind of eco-warrior outdoorsman?
I would quite like to get back out and DJ, but I have more of a drive to go out on my paddleboard, going down the river, picking up a massive bag of plastic and taking it to the tip. Whereas the DJing was pretty good. It just took about 8 months to design a 1 hour set of all my own music. And then you get to play it in front of people who are drunk, you know, and who don't really listen to it.
It just strikes me that there's a lot of similarities between electronic dance music and, in a way, marathon swimming, in that they're both kind of hypnotic, otherworldly environments, and that they tend to, you know, alter your sense of consciousness a little bit.
So when it comes down to the level of thinking and a level of switch off, and especially like with the rolling techno and like they're swimming along and listening to the bubbles, there's a hypnosis sort of level in there, definitely. Although I wouldn't advise listening to heavy techno while on a 10k swim. Actually being immersed and actually outside is my doctor. I can't go without being in the water for, you know, a good few days. It's fine, I can really re-tune into what I'm meant to be doing. Once I've been in the water, I couldn't see anything different. I would need to be in there all the time. I would live in the water if I could.
Fennec Ridley is now finishing up swimming the length of the South Tyne River, where he's raising money for the Teenage Cancer Trust. Find him on Instagram, Facebook, or search online for his H2O trails.
In the next edition of the Swim Out podcast, we'll be talking about the heroes and heroines of swimming's past and hearing from an expert about the illustrious history of bathing.
To play us out, here's one of Fennec's soundscapes, Organic System with Atmosphere Recording from Planet Zine.